So if Hans would come up and say, please. So I want to remind everybody that every 2 years we need to file on any changes to the CMR work plan. So Hans is here to highlight changes in this next biennium CMR work plan, correct?
Good afternoon, Chair, members of the board. My name is Hans Burge. I'm the Adaptive Management Program Administrator. And I am here to talk to you about the changes in the biennial work CMR work plan. In my staff report to the Forest Practices Board, there's a short memo. It talks about water typing and small forest landowner template on the first page. And then the second page highlights the changes in the CMR work plan. And most of the changes in the CMR work plan were really more around clarification. And so I'll highlight a couple of important pieces first, and then I'll walk through the contents of the memo. The first one is to remember, with all of the Type F discussion that policy was having, and there were some technical subgroups of policy that were put together, and it was very important that I went to CMR and asked the CMR co-chairs and the CMR body to reestablish ISAG, the In-Stream Scientific Advisory Group, as a nice place that is consistent with our process where In-Stream and Type F in particular issues could land. So that was the first step, and it took us some time to do that. They started to meet in the fall of 2016, and so they're a little behind the curve. They started meeting immediately when we were establishing the CMR work plan, and so I'll start with the In-Stream Scientific Advisory Group. Because there were a number of places where critical questions were missing with respect to the Type F discussions that were going on, many of the things we talked about today. And so the ISAG group identified three main potential projects. And what they did is, one nice thing about ISAG is that it really is probably the best multi-caucus participation SAG. I mean, literally, I think just about every caucus is represented there by many of the same people that are the technical group we talked about earlier. And they are focused on Type F issues. And so, no surprise, some priorities that you all have talked about rose to the top of their priorities, which are default physical criteria, using eDNA to detect fish and or fish habitat, and then issues around better understanding of recoverable, restorable fish habitat. And those projects have not been defined as projects yet. The first step is doing a literature review, and so they added that to the work plan and added critical questions around those. Then we get to the Upland Scientific Advisory Group, UPSAG. That's the SAG that's focused on unstable slopes. And many of the items that they addressed here were really some changes, and they were also accounting for some projects that were being done as part of the PI that I talked about yesterday, the unstable slopes PI. And so clarity around the literature synthesis of the effects on glacial deep-seated landslides, that lit review is done. And so they wanted to make sure and capture it within the CMR work plan. It happened a little bit out of sequence there. And then there's a project on the effects of non-glacial deep-seated landslides as a result of the PI. And so they got that in the work plan. And then the second part where they added some clarity was around the deep-seated landslide research strategy project. And that is to follow both of those literature reviews, literature syntheses, to set up the next, for this next biennium, the deep-seated strategy. And so I think you're all aware of that. Then we get into the Landscape and Wildlife Advisory, LWAG, group. And they're focused on the hard rock type N experimental buffer treatment project in hard rock lithologies. That was, that's been a long project. It's been going for around a decade now between planning and implementation. And so what they focused on here, the original project is going to be done in June 2017, but the extended data set that they had approval to collect the data, they just added some clarity around some of those things. They also added some clarity that I think was overlooked previously on the project and some of the products there. And so that was really just kind of a touch up and primarily editing. Then we get into the Wetland Scientific Advisory Group, WETSAG, and they added a previously completed but missing project, the Forested Wetlands Literature Review and Workshop Project to the work plan. And they also added a new program research question for the Forested Wetlands Effectiveness Project. That's one of the twig projects that we talked about, is the lean pilots. And so there was an additional question that they added there, and I don't recall what that question was. Apologize for that. And then we get into SAGE, the Scientific Advisory Group for the East Side, and they updated the title and description section for the literature review and synthesis related to fire salvage, and that project is going on right now also, and it's going to be completed in the next couple months. And then they talked a bit about the East Side Timber Habitat Types project, and we can talk about that with the budget later. And then in RSAG, the Riparian Scientific Advisory Group, they combined the Type N and Type F section for extensive riparian status and trends monitoring program together. And then they added a new project, Riparian Characteristics and a Shade Response Study, that is just getting underway in the next biennium. There's been some scoping and some things written about that, but it's just being initiated.
Is that for the West Side?
It's for East Side.
I thought we already did shade on the East Side.
This actually is to inform, the shade part of this is really to update the existing model. I think that's the main point there, but it's really focused on characterization of the riparian zones.
Okay, well, to take that
I'd off. Be happy to give you more detail about that. I don't have it.
Yeah, because I thought we already did a riparian characteristics study on the East Side.
We did the ERAP study.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is a little bit more focused. And I can bring back the specifics on that. It's okay. Just getting started is the point there. So that's in the that's.
Is it, I'm assuming it's going to supplement what's already been done.
Yes.
Okay. Remember, Lori. Just a question. So are these projects reflected on the budget?
Yes. The ones that were already completed, not so much. The ones that, yes, they are. Yeah, you'll see some of these names as we go through the budget in a few minutes here. So this is just an update. There wasn't a major rewrite or anything like that. We did talk about trying to make the work plan more nimble, more accurate to reflect the projects in the next biennium, almost like an action plan or an active projects plan, something like that. And CMER is still talking about how to do that and what the elements would be. But I can tell you the intent would be to have a one-page description of where the projects are in completion, what the critical questions were, which rule group, and then an abstract just to give a sense of what the project is. So when you ask me that specific question, I can say, here you go. Here it is in one page. So that's what we're looking for. And the idea is that it would be a living document, much like the work plan. And as steps were being completed in the project, you would update the status. It'd just be a way for project managers to communicate with policy and CMER and the board, not so much CMER, but policy and the board, on exactly where projects are. So that's what we're talking about doing, and I hope that we can make some progress on that this coming time.
Okay, any questions from the board members?
Not really a question, I just, great to see the PD&A stuff on here for me. And you just read about all these developments in that area, and it seemed like it could be a very useful tool for us, so I'm really glad that you're taking it.
Yeah, a lot of interest around that. We had a speaker from the PNW Research Station that came to ISAG and presented a number of results. In fact, a number of the companies that you all work for are using eDNA, working with eDNA as well, participating. So there is, you know, the science is moving forward, it's improving. And so the time and the opportunity there, making sure that, you know, we are kept abreast of the information and really, you know, paying attention to the developments is important.
If I can make a comment, our company has been working on eDNA and we've still got high hopes for it, but we're about a year back. We kind of got set back because it's not quite right yet. We need to have a little more accuracy. We're continuing to work with it. We have a number of people in our company that are really involved in it. So I think it's going to be good, but it's not quite there yet.
Right. So just to clarify to the board members who may not have been aware of what eDNA is and what it has the potential to do for us?
eDNA is environmental DNA, and the way that it works is that cells are sloughed off, just like, you know, human cells, in water. And so the difference is if you have a frog or a fish or an amphibian, any kind of amphibian, or even elk, can contribute to some of this. And you take a water sample and you go through a series of filtration steps that you can use a PCR, a polymerase chain reaction, to amplify that material and to look for specific species, not individuals necessarily, but species. There's something called metabarcoding where you take one snapshot look at all of the species that have markers. And so as they amplify, they kind of sort themselves out by weight. And you can see, oh, the weight of this is equivalent to a fish and potentially a bull trout, for example. And you say, oh, there's bull trout DNA in this system. Now, one of the interesting things is they've been comparing it to electrophishing. One recent paper came out comparing it to snorkeling, so visual observation. And surprisingly, snorkeling worked better than eDNA. Fish were observed that the eDNA didn't capture, just ocular. And so, point being, there's still some progress to be made on it. It does seem to provide a good amount, it does provide good information, but it may not be sufficient for determining the last fish. And that is really where the question, I think, of its utility is. And that's one place where I thought the investigation would really be helpful is how could we use it in that case? And if it would be better or even as good as electrophishing or some other tools. And so I think, and ISAG is committed to work on this. There's a subgroup that's formed made up of some good number crunching kind of people that think about these kinds of things, and you're in good hands, I guess, with that particular group. They're well on their way to helping us look at other options that would improve the accuracy of the water typing system. So that's just one of the tools. And then also recoverable habitat was the other one, with the definition of fish habitat, and then default physical criteria. So really, everything that ISAG has prioritized is around water typing.
Board Member Bullock.
Thank you. I do remember reading about it Monday now. Thank you.
Any other questions for us on this issue? All right, moving on to the next agenda item, which is Ponce's presentation of the master project schedule and the proposed budget for the 17-19 biennium. Again, I think Hans will be highlighting the changes for us from the current master project schedule and talk about the proposed budget. Now, in this case, The good news is the governor's budget, the House budget, the Senate budget all have the same amount of money for SEMR in their budget. So it's unlikely, we know how much money we're going to have available, assuming nothing goes sideways on us between now and the end of session. So we can be fairly confident with whatever proposal comes forward. So you want to take us through that?
Sure. I would start by, you know, everybody trying, if you can find this budget. It's a pretty complex document. I worked with a policy subgroup to try to figure out if there was a better, easier way to present this information that was more digestible. But other than a few tweaks here and there, we, you know, it's just kind of a complicated issue. So I want to talk about a couple of main points. And I'll just walk through the headings. I think that's probably a way to do it. So on the administration and program staff issue, you'll see a couple of items in there that are zeros in the budget. One is highlighted there, and that was a request that I made at SEMR and at policy for a science staff at the UCUT or potentially another place in Eastern Washington, because SAGE, this advisory group, Eastern Washington, east side, could use some additional technical expertise and skills to help them bring projects forward, in particular rule evaluation. And so I kind of put it forward in consultation with some east side tribes in particular about this. And the thought was it might be a good opportunity to try to add somebody there for the next biennium, because there are a number of projects that need to be developed that there's just not the capacity there. And so the thought was it'd be nice to have a scientist on the other side of the mountains. Now, all of the SEMR scientists certainly can participate on east side issues. There's not a conflict there. But when it came right down to implementation of the budget, the numbers just didn't pan out for that position to be added during this biennium. Interestingly enough, policy, when they approved the budget, they left out years 2020 through 2030 for that position. And so it's the conversation is still alive, but the devil's going to be in the details about the timing of when that position is going to be added. Now, just to complicate matters, we have a position that's currently vacant with our SEMR scientists, a riparian ecologist position that just recently closed. And so there was some discussion about reprioritizing that person and having them at the east side. And I've had conversations with the Northwest Indian Fisheries Commission, their HR people and the science manager, Dave Schutt-Hames, and also Jim Peters, to try to talk about what that would look like. And that wouldn't work out very well for the commission to try to supervise somebody that's housed on the east side. It just probably wouldn't work out very well. And so that, which made a lot of sense. And so what we discussed instead is making sure that the full-time equivalent of a person would be prioritized to do east side work of the five positions that we have. And so we'll still advance the work of SAGE, but it'll be done through the existing Northwest Indian Fisheries Commission setup that we have. And so that we're going to try that out, and I know that there's a commitment from people to really try to make that work. And so we'll try to do that. The other point is I'm up here before the board often to talk about the budget and reconciliation of the budget. And so if we see unspent funds in the biennium, that might be something to think about. That might be a place that we could make that happen sooner rather than later. And that's what I've expressed to the proponents of having that position on the east side, is when we come before the board again, if we see that as a timely expense or something like that, or there's real need, then we would probably make that pitch here. So if that conversation comes up, then go on. Then we get to one of the issues, which is on row 13. And so you'll see those little numbers on the left side, which is TFW Policy Committee Technical Support. And underneath that technical support, there's unstable slopes, PI, which we talked about. Any follow-up on type F, which we've discussed, and type N, which has been on the back burner for water typing, and then off-channel habitat. And I want to point out that what has been highlighted as resources in 2018 and 19 is only $75,000 per year. And to take on that many topics, if even a couple of those go forward, and there were any kind of studies, directed studies for either evaluation of off-channel habitat in particular, anything to do with unstable slopes that isn't in the budget currently, or for type N if there are things, that money won't go very far. So I think that's an important piece to point out. It really focuses on the priorities of policy, which reflect largely the priorities of the board. Then we get, I want to just highlight number 16, the statistician position. It's much like the UCUT position. It's something that I feel for a science program, having a contract in place for statistical consultation would be very helpful and productive to have to use for multiple projects and issues that come up, including this technical group, for example, we talked about earlier. But when it came down to the numbers, policy didn't feel like there was funding to be placed there. And so that didn't get the funding for the biennium. But you'll also see that in out years it was left. And I'll talk about out years after we get through some of these things. Okay, then we get to active projects. These are the things that are going to be completed within the biennium, and then one that is potentially going to be stretching out into the next year, but largely completed. The riparian literature synthesis and small forest landowner template review. You'll notice that Ken Miller didn't talk about the template and the inaction on the template this time. We're very happy about that. We've gone out, we have a contractor in place that's working on it right now. And we're hoping to have some results, probably preliminary results in August, but better results for the board at your November meeting. And so I just wanted to highlight that. We're working on the LIDAR-based water typing model and the default physicals that we talked about earlier. There's a little bit of stretch into the next biennium on those. The wetland mapping tool validation, that's a study that's being done with the University of, that's on Road 22. That's a study being done at the University of Washington, and the model part of it's done, and now it's just the validation, and that's going to be this summer when that happens, and so that'll be completed there. And then we get into, there's some RSAG work on remote sensing, looking at extensive monitoring using remote sensing of riparian zones and vegetation. And the Precision Forestry Group at the University of Washington is going to have a report for us in the next couple of months completing that work. And then this money here is for the next steps. There may be some peer review, there may be some steps that RSAG wants to take. And so it's a bit of a placeholder right there.
So is this study a proof of concept?
Initially it was a pilot. And so then the question is what to do with the results. And so there is some money here to do some more evaluation, probably to contract with Precision Forestry to get some follow-up work, depending. It's really a placeholder, I would say, with a specific amount of money that probably needs, well, it definitely needs more detail before we can really do anything with it. Then we get into the hard rock genetics, amphibian genetics piece, and this report has been completed by Dr. Stephen Spear, who did the original work. He's in Ohio, I believe, and this is for him to be able to respond to comments from the independent peer review project, and that number, I believe, is going to be high, but we just don't know until we get into it, the 19,000 there. And then we get into soft rock. There's a number of pieces of soft rock in here, but this first part is the monitoring that's going to end in 2017, and as part of the two-year post-harvest, the monitoring part of it is coming to an end. And then we have some existing projects that commitments have been made to extend different pieces of them. The first one is Hard Rock, and the data was collected in 2016 and 17, and now the next biennium, the data's been sitting on the shelf since December, basically. And so this work is going to be to analyze and summarize that report, which is in addition to the original Hard Rock study, which has, I think it's 16 chapters. It's basically a book, and that's going to be completed in June. So that is really, that's just it's an analysis of 2 years of data post-harvest. Or actually, it's 4 years later than the post-harvest. So then we get to Hard Rock for the temperature and sediment. The first one is a contract for channel characteristics, amphibians, riparian vegetation, and the second one focuses on sediment and discharge. The second box there. And then the third box is monitoring of sites where, before they're harvested, we have some reference sites that we're continuing to monitor that are important, because if we don't monitor those before they're harvested, we'll lose that ability to compare data sets. And so that's in there for some field work that's ongoing. And then we get into the big areas, I would argue, where the most uncertainty and the most expense lies. And these are mostly the pilot, lean pilot projects. And if you look at the numbers there, there's a certain amount of sticker shock. I still have it after looking at them, because it's an awful lot of money for some pretty important long-term before after control impact studies that, like we talked about earlier, in terms of the budget, you know, we're looking at 2026 as a completion date for some of these. And so it really is a big commitment up front, and it's a long-term commitment of a lot of our money. And so this is back to some of the things that I talked about with priorities and setting priorities, I think are so crucial in how we prioritize projects and fund projects. I think there needs to be a lot more discussion than we currently have around that. And so the first one is the Eastside Type N Riparian Effectiveness Study for Perennial Streams. It's called NREP. And that project is, the study design is currently being evaluated. And the intent is that the first year we'd be finding sites and doing some preliminary information, and then getting into the pre-harvest sampling in 2019.
So are we actually going to get that in the field this summer?
Not this summer. We're still waiting for the ISPR review of the study design. And then it's going to be gearing up and refining the study design through ISPR. And then it'll be going into the field in 2019, fiscal year 2019. So that's a year, roughly a little over a year from now. So next summer. Then the second one is the Type F Riparian Prescription Effectiveness Monitoring. So this is buffers on Type F streams, and that's a West Side project, obviously. And that project is also at ISPR, and there's recognition that there's no way to go into the field, but this project has a two-phase component. The first one is looking at the conditions that exist for the first year. And then following that analysis, you'll see that there's a zero in 2020. And then in 2021 would be when the next part of the study, the Bakke study, would go into play. So the idea is that you would gather information to better design the big study. So it's more focused, which is kind of a different approach, but it seems to make sense. And that $50,000 there is assuming that we get the study design back relatively quickly and start that process of looking at existing sites in places where riparian prescriptions have been prescribed, and then doing FPA reviews and some other things. And that's the in this current biennium, that's where we would get in the current biennium and take a break to really examine all the data and tee it up for the next part of the study. And then we get into the real big one, the roads prescription scale effectiveness monitoring, EMPs for roads, and those are big, you know, we talked about our maps and how expensive roads are. Well, roads are also very expensive to study. And that's this project is also in the peer review phase. It's been reviewed at ISPR and getting tweaked and updated. There's a PhD student at the University of Washington that's dedicated to be working on this project as well. And you know, it's a Clean Water Act assurance, of course, like many of these other ones are, where they have CWA. And so it really is a, you know, it's a big commitment from the program to take that project on. Then we get into the unstable slopes criteria evaluation and development. This is the RIL study that I talked about yesterday. And this $50,000 there, that's really to cover the contracting. They're working on the study design. And if you recall, a lot of the elements in the PI, the unstable slopes PI, were really punted to wait until that study comes online to answer them. And so it's a really important study from several different elements of our program. But the rural identified landforms piece of it, I think, is really probably the highest priority and most important part related to unstable slopes that they're going to be doing. Then we get into the forested wetlands effectiveness study, and that study is also, they're working on a study design, and more to come there. They have an alternative that's been passed through policy, but they're still working on study design. Then we get into the east side type N riparian effectiveness dry study or non-perennial study of NREP. And there's a group that's working together. It's a lot of duplication between the perennial twig, and they're looking at opportunities in evaluating the effectiveness of different prescriptions on spatially intermittent portions of waters on the east side, which are pretty common. Maybe not so common this year, I guess, but during most years they're pretty common. And so the idea is to look at prescriptions there. Now there's still an opportunity for that study to be combined with the perennial study. So we're still looking at opportunities to take advantage there, depending on what the science, how the science ferrets out there. And so that is still a little bit up in the air, but they're working on developing a study design for that. And they've still got some work to do with some of the elements around scoping, but that's where that study lies. And then we talked about it earlier, the glacial deep-seated strategy. And they were really waiting, this is an UPSAG project, and they were waiting on the results of the literature review for deep-seated and non-glacial and glacial deep-seated landslides. And so they're planning to work with a contractor in 2018 and tee up that work and then go into implementation to develop that strategy and do some work related to deep-seated slides. And so that's more to come there. And then the wetlands management zone effectiveness monitoring of wet sag. This is a project that they're working on scoping. They're trying to see if they have the expertise in-house to do a lot of the scoping for that. But that would fit into our project, the next phase of the project. There isn't a twig identified for that, but a project team is starting to form around that project. And so there's still some work to be done there. Then we have a lot of projects that are just starting in the study design or scoping phase. And one is the UPSAG Mass Waste Scheme Land Scale Effectiveness Project. That's a Clean Water Act project. This $80,000 there is really to test to see if it's even doable. And so this is one that could turn into a project in future years, but it was time to investigate it. And like I said, it's a Clean Water Act assurance there. Then we talk about,
excuse me, yeah. So the funding that it shows in the out years are just if it goes forward.
That's right. Yeah. That's right. And, you know, and I'll talk about the out years a little bit, but that's just it's a placeholder, assuming that could turn into a study. If it's not feasible, they'd be zeroed out and, you know, we would know. But the first step is to take a stab at that. We have a new geologist at the commission within our science staff that we added at the last biennium that you approved, and he has specific expertise around this topic using remote sensing. And so I'm very hopeful that he's going to be able to help in ways that we really didn't have the in-house capacity there before. Then we have this riparian characteristics and shade study. And the thought there is like I said, there's still some scoping that's going on there. It only has $5,000 in there. And it's more or less to say this project's alive. We need to make some progress on it. But there's still a lot of discussion within our SAG on the best way to do that project. And so it really, there's a lot of detail to be developed around this one. Then we get to ISAG, and two of the three projects that they put into the work plan, default physical criteria assessment, so that's a literature review, and that would be done in combination with the study design work that we're having done by outside experts. They would work together, and that group would need to check in with ISAG, see if this is even necessary. It may not be necessary. That's why it's put out to the second year as a placeholder. Then we get into the literature synthesis for fish habitat detection using eDNA, and we are going to be ready to go with something in the first year of the biennium, certainly. So there's already, ISAG's already working on getting a better understanding of the best available science around that and really understanding if that's something they want to do or if the technology is moving so fast that it would become dated and it wouldn't be worth the effort to do an exhaustive literature review that was out, you know, that was not the best available science by the time it gets published. And so there was some discussion about that there, and ISAG is well equipped to deal with that. Then there's another item here, number 44, and this is SAGE ETHEP, which is the East Side Timber Habitat Type Project. And what that's about is the rules on the east side are based on the timber habitat types and based in elevation. You can imagine in Goldendale, for example, with precipitation and geology and climate and all those things, the species that are present there at a given elevation are completely different than Calden. And so the idea that there's this one side, east side, one size fits all, is pretty silly. And everyone knows that. And so the thought here was to take a crack at revisiting that and developing timber habitat types that actually make sense. So that was where this was focused on east side rules. And SAGE put together some budget items there, and they're still working on some of the details, but it needs scoping and we need to have a study design before there's money. But I look at it as a little bit of a chicken and egg argument, because if you don't have money to do scoping and design and a study design, then you won't know what kind of a project you're going to build. And so policy did zero out that project as a placeholder, thinking there was more information to come, and the information that showed up just corroborated that study was necessary, but it needs to be fully scoped before we know what the project would cost. And so that was the issue there with that project. Now the rest of these, and I'm not going to go into these, but I think it's important to note that these are all projects that are on the master project schedule. They've been added by policy and CEMER and recommended to move forward. They are not requesting funds during this biennium at all. But that doesn't mean that the out-year budgets are accurate. Some of them don't even have budgets right now, but that they are really just placeholders. And it's important to recognize that they are on the master project schedule. They are, there is work that's gonna be done on those projects to tee them up to become a fully implemented project, but that they're not seeking funds during this biennium. Some of them are moving forward during this biennium without seeking specific project funds. And so I think it's important to just recognize that they're still in play, they're important, they're placeholders.